The matter of Kevin Malanga versus the Township of West Orange. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Honorable Justices. James Turteltaub, T-U-R-T-E-L-T-A-U-B, on behalf of Kevin Malanga.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Trank, T-R-E-N-K, Trank Isabel, Siddiqui, and Tridanian, on behalf of the Township of West Orange.
Good morning, Your Honors. Vito Dagliardi from the firm of Folger, Robert Newman, on behalf of the Township of West Orange Planning Board. Mr. Trank will be arguing on behalf of all parties.
Welcome to all counsel. Justice Solomon will be participating and is watching the argument. Mr. Turteltaub, please go ahead.
Honorable Justices, may it please the court. Before I get into my argument, I would like to ask to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal at the end of the township's argument.
We'll have you back, perhaps for a little less, but please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. During a West Orange Township Council meeting that took place regarding redevelopment, the question was asked by a council member, if it's public property, why do we need to designate it as an area in need of redevelopment? And the response that came from the mayor was, quote, as public property, to sell public property or to look to develop it, you'd have to auction it off to the highest bidder. We would lose control of the process. So we believe it's more important to first study some of these particulars and then be able to control the process, as opposed to just putting it out to bid and getting the highest bidder. The mayor made clear that the local redevelopment housing law was being used to avoid the public bid law. Mr. Trank, the township's attorney, then added, quote, the Public Buildings Act would require you to just put it on the block and then you'd lose control. So this is the only way you will decide what's going to happen to the future of this site. The township's goal was to use the powers granted under the local redevelopment housing law to convey its library to a preferred private developer without auctioning the property to the highest bidder. Notably, the redevelopment process was not started because the feeling the property was actually blighted. Clearly, the blight designation under review herein was a done deal before any investigation ever was commenced. The predetermined conclusion was premised on the pretext that the library was blighted merely because it could be better. At the heart of this matter, now before this court, is whether the framers of the New Jersey Constitution envisioned that the definition of blight encompasses property that could be better. If so, then every property, private or public, in the state of New Jersey could be found to be blighted and therefore opening the door to widespread abuse by the governing authorities, and the abuse, and this abuse would include such things as evading the public bid laws, as we have in this case, abusing the awesome power of eminent domain, permitting favoritism in taxation, and enabling other actions that would erode the public's trust in government and eviscerating the constitutional protections for private property and equal protection. The likelihood of this result has clearly been demonstrated by the actions of the township, which were rubber-stamped by the courts below. What's next? Town hall, the police station, the DPW facility? All of these types of properties could be better in one way or another. And the question then becomes, if the standard is, could it be better, is blight, then we would have all of these buildings subjected to potential designation as areas in need of redevelopment. The only finding in this case the township made to support the redevelopment area designation was under blight criteria NJSA 4812A-5D. In particular, that provision states in relevant part that a property could be blighted due to obsolescence or obsolete layout that causes a detriment to the safety, health, morals, or welfare of the community. More specifically, the township's designation was premised solely on the library being detrimental to the welfare of the community, not the other standards, just the welfare, by being allegedly not supporting programming of either defined or explained as being programming of modern libraries. In contradiction to the finding
What was the last thing you said, programming of what?
Of modern libraries.
Of modern libraries, thank
right.
you.
In contradiction to the findings of blight, based on the facility being a detriment to the welfare of the community, statements made by the township admit that the library is actually okay. One councilwoman stated during the vote in favor of the designation, the comments about being a detriment to the public welfare sound so harsh and so negative. And to me, it means that we are adequately meeting all of the needs of the community and it could do better. And again, this same language is embodied within paragraph 6 of the resolution, which is really the only finding in this case as to what constituted the detriment to the community. This councilwoman went on to say that it's okay, and that's where we're at. It's just okay, and yet there's potential here to do so much more. During the hearing under NJSA 4812A-6 on whether to recommend, the planning board recommend that this property be deemed to be blighted, one of the planning board members said, similarly stated, that the library is not a detriment to the community when voting to recommend it. More specifically, this planning board member said, quote, "I do not believe that anyone is stating the library is detrimentally harming the community as it currently exists. I think the statement is that the community is being harmed by what we're not receiving. And I don't think anyone is saying that the library as it exists is harming the residents of West Orange. It is, I'm sure, helping the residents. But could it help the residents even more? And I think that's what the task is." Now, besides these stark admissions, the facts in the record clearly show that the library is not blighted or a detriment to the community. In the statistics that were contained within their planning reports, it shows that this library has 150,000 visits a year. In fact, the same report said that it had an unusually high number of visits for the year. In addition, this library is frequented by school children, seniors, and everybody in between. So when you hear things in the reports such as asbestos and other conditions that they talk about, there's nothing in place that even evidences any type of concern that these conditions are actually harmful to the health, safety, and welfare of the community. It's acted as a hub for the community, as demonstrated by the record, and it's used for community meetings and functions. Furthermore, these facts do not indicate the type of obsolescence that is contemplated by the local redevelopment and housing law, and is contemplated really by the Blighted Areas Clause under which this arises. You have in Spruce Manor, which is a case that was not only, it's a low division case, but it was relied upon by the Concerned Citizens Court. It talks about and provides a definition, one of the few definitions we have in the statute, in the case law, as to what obsolescence is, the obsolescence that they're pointing to in this case. And in Spruce Manor, they talk about obsolescence as being defined as the process of falling into disuse and relates to the usefulness and public acceptance of a facility. Well, here, we don't have disuse. We have 150,000 residents, 40,000 citizens in West Orange, and 150,000 visits to this site. It's not disuse. It's not falling into a lack of acceptance by the community. In fact, it's widely accepted by the community. The Spruce Manor Court further defined the term obsolete as being no longer active, which I think, again, the facts belie, or in use, disuse, and neglected. And none of those facts arise in this case. And again, we have an ends that was to sell the property outside the public bid laws that was met by contriving a result that said, if it could be better. The evidence in the record clearly just doesn't support the finding. Clearly, the record herein does not contain the requisite substantial, credible evidence to support the redevelopment designation. Notwithstanding the township's abuse of the redevelopment process to bypass the public bid law was supported by the unfettered discretion given by the courts below. The courts weren't going to step in and say, we're not going to judge what the township decided. And that's a problem because this process here, not only in the case of giving away or transferring public property outside the public bid laws, but it could reach an eminent domain and other issues. And the court below really needs to step in and do a two-step process. One, to examine the evidence. Now, you might have substantial evidence, but the question is it substantial evidence that evidences the blight criteria as contemplated by the Blighted Areas Clause under which this whole act arises? Yes.
When you're referring to the public bid law, you're referring to 40A12-13, right?
Correct. And under subsection C, the municipality in a redevelopment area can avoid public bidding and select its own developer.
Understood. But the introductory section to 40A12-13 before it lists A, B, or C, it says that any county may sell any real property other than county or municipal lands through these three processes. But here we're talking about county or municipal lands being sold, correct?
Correct.
So what should we make of the fact that the statute that you're referring to says sales, any county or municipality may sell any real property other than county or municipal lands? Why would that apply
here? It goes on to say that you unless you go through a process, unless you meet one of the criteria. And so under subsection C, it says you can't sell it unless it's an area in need of redevelopment. And in that case, you don't have to go through the public bid process, but there are different points that are made within the statute that allow you to sell the property under those conditions. And so that's outlining the process in which you would dispose of municipal property.
But the statute seems to be saying that A, B, and C, the three different ways, the public bidding, the private sale in certain specific circumstances, or the private sale when the municipality is acting in accordance with the local redevelopment law, only come into play when any county or municipality is selling any property other than county or municipal lands.
I believe the only thing that the county or municipality can sell is county or municipal land.
Okay, so we should just...
I believe that the statute is intending to address the way in which municipalities and counties can sell municipal land or county land.
Thank you.
No, I thank you. And in looking at this decision, it not only addresses, and as pointed out by Her Honor, that the property impacts public land, which is in the context of this case, but let's take this a step further. The redevelopment light criteria under NJSA 48-12A-5 is the standard for public property, for private property. It's the standard for condemnation areas, non-condemnation areas. The legislature didn't distinguish between the types of property or the potential ways in which it's going to be acquired in establishing the Blight criteria. There's one standard. And in this case, if you were allowed to say that property, merely by being possibly being better, somehow gives rise to a detriment to the welfare of the community, which that detriment then gives rise to a finding of blight, you then have the issue of, well, what happens in private property? Let's talk about that for a second. Because in private property, you could still make improvements. Every property could probably stand improvements. Even new construction could probably do something that would make it better. Additional investment. What does additional investment do? Additional investment generates additional ratables. Additional ratables support the community. And it's a detriment under the same logic that's applied here that theoretically, if you don't make those improvements, you're now hurting the community, you're hurting the welfare of the community by denying it of the additional tax ratables you might be able to get by that additional investment. It's a slippery slope when you have such a wide open opportunity to designate properties.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Please finish your...
No, I was going to say, and this was a concern that was expressed in the Glenton case by the overly broad definition, which the courts below didn't want to apply under subsection D because the feeling is 62 and 64 Main Street said, well, we're not supposed to consider Glenton when we look at D. But I think you have to, because the theory in Glenton was that blight is an exception to the rule. It's not every property. And that we have to find these criteria. So when in Glenton, the court said it was too overly broad that every property could be encompassed in this definition, I think we have the same problem here, that the mere possibility of property being able to be better in and of itself as being the basis for a designation is a slippery slope that I think violates this court's ruling in Glenton, and I think is not what the Constitution envisions when it talks about the remediation of blighted property.
Section 5D, being relied on doesn't explicitly distinguish, as you've suggested, between privately owned property and governmentally owned property, right?
Correct.
But in terms of the phrase detrimental to the community, is the governing body situated in a somewhat different and better position to evaluate the impact on the community as a whole than they would with regard to a private parcel?
Two things with that. One, in terms of its ability to evaluate the community as a whole, the issue here is what is blight? Blight is, I think, a standard that should be universal. So when you look at blight as to whether a library is blighted, and if you have two buildings side by side, a public library and a private library, the fact that a public library may have a condition at the same thing that a private library does, if the public library is blighted and they're exactly the same, the private library should be blighted as well. Whether or not it's a public, the public can access it, let's say university library or whatever the case may be, And I believe here, maybe inherent in the question you're asking is, can we have a different standard? Because it's serving the public, does it have a different standard than if it's just serving a purely private interest? And I think that it should be, at least the way the legislature has written the statutes. If the legislature wants to change the statute, fine. But the way it's written now, I think it has to be the same analysis. Is blight is blight. And those are defined under subsection 5. And if the public library exhibits blight, and a private library is exactly the same, theoretically should exhibit blight, or vice versa.
The language in 2A is very general. Would you agree with that? Statement of legislative purpose there exists. I won't read the whole thing, but it talks about conditions of deterioration in housing, commercial, industrial installations, lack of proper development, result from forces which are amenable to correction and amelioration, and without this public effort are not likely to be corrected or ameliorated by any private effort. I mean, it doesn't talk about disuse. It doesn't seem to require that the property have deteriorated to the point where the community cannot get any value from it. What is the principled standard that you would have the court apply to distinguish between situations which you would concede belong in the blight part of the equation from the situation such as the West Orange Library?
So
where is it in the statute?
In the statute, it's not defined. In the statute, well, I take it back. In the statute, it is defined under subsection 5. And those are words. And as something my father used to say, listen to the music and not the words. The question is, what are they really trying to get at? In subsection 5. They're trying to come up with a definition of blight.
Well, let me be a little clearer with the question. You want us to say that the West Orange Library does not meet blight. What is the defining principle that you would distinguish between property that has deteriorated to the point where you think it meets it and property that doesn't?
So this court has talked about, has made definitions. Blight is generally defined as something that impairs growth, withers hopes, ambitions, impedes progress and prosperity.
It's almost poetic.
It's all poetic. But what they're trying to do is exhibit the type of substandard property. Again, going back to Spruce Manor, when they talk about disuse.
Would you agree that withers hopes is not a standard that could give notice to people as to whether their property is withering hopes or not withering hopes? What is it that you say the court should say that will apply to this case and future cases that will clearly give municipalities and others, interested parties, notice as to when a municipality is acting within its statutory authority and when it's not?
It should be such a standard that when review, and to come back, when you look at subsection 5, it should be read in paramateri with the blighted areas clause. And the purpose of trying to regenerate properties, to bring properties from disuse into use, where the market would not do it, and in case even government properties
but
it may not do it.
You would agree that it doesn't have to be disuse. This doesn't have to be an abandoned property that's so useless that no one ever goes there.
If it exhibits the kind of conditions, though, so when you have a, and this is where the two-step process is very important for the courts below to look to undertake, instead of just giving deference to these determinations when they're made by the municipality. But the standard should be one wherein that without public intervention, you now have an impact on the community that is detrimental. Now, when you talk about detrimental...
Okay, let me stop you right there. The library hypothetically goes from 150,000 visits a year to 145,000 visits a year. Isn't that a detrimental impact?
Question is what's the cause of it? In this record, we have nothing.
Okay, and it's the cause of it is that they haven't kept up with new computers and new facilities.
That could be a budget. It may have nothing to do with the building. So you have to look at all of these facts.
But I'm asking a question. Is that detriment?
Is it detriment? I don't believe it's kind of detriment that's considered to be for blight. It may be that the community needs a bigger budget. It may be that the community has other issues at hand. But it also may be that because of technology, people just don't use libraries like they used to. And in fact, I think this is an issue that's going to come around with libraries all over the state of New Jersey.
It's not just detriment, is it? When you move from the poetry to the prose, we have to look at 5D. And 5D sets out a number of terms, obsolescence, faulty arrangement, or design, which are relevant mm-hmm. here, that those terms are detrimental. So isn't the pros in 5D?
The pros are in 5D, and it has to be looked at as, I guess, as more of a package as well, because I'm not sure, I believe that those are the factors that the legislature thought would be indicative of the blight conditions, when you take those pieces there. And you have to look at the condition of the property and whether the condition of the property, not maybe the services it offers, not maybe, again, you might have something, that a movie theater might be a perfectly fine structure, could be converted to some other use, but today people don't go to movie theaters, because it automatically make, if the use itself changes, Does the building itself all of a sudden become blighted immediately?
But Justice Patterson's questions show how hard it may be to apply some of these terms. Mm-hmm. You started out by talking about the public bidding process that municipalities ordinarily go through. Does that give us any guidance in terms of how broadly or how narrowly the terms in 5D should be read?
I think it does give you some advantage. It gives you an example as to why it should be read more narrowly than broadly, because the more broadly you do it, the more you can encompass any property and come up with any type of result. It comes back then to the problem raised in Aerotech, where all you have to do is really say, well, I think it's a faulty layout. What faulty layout? I don't know. I don't know a better layout. But because we then think it's a faulty layout, somehow a faulty layout is now detrimental to the health, safety, welfare of the community. You can put together the words, but it doesn't embody the spirit of. And I'm trying to work with you on the issue also in 62 to 64, which says you could have a site-specific designation, which doesn't impact the community. But I really think it does come back to the issue of how it does impact society. The Blighted Areas Clause was meant to try to bring back properties where areas were decaying, where areas weren't being utilized properly, that they needed some sort of intervention. And this is, again, a public project. The intervention is for a public purpose. And it's when the public should step in rather than private investment. You've got potholes in your driveway. I don't think it's the government's responsibility to come in and take over your property and fill them in. It should be something where it rises.
The Blighted Areas Clause, as you just said, is specifically talking about the redevelopment of blighted areas being a public purpose and public use for which private property can be taken or acquired. So here, where we're not talking about a takings, why do we need the same narrow interpretation of any provision of 1285? It seemed like Gallatin, the specific basis of the decision, was that E needed to be read narrowly so as not to conflict with the Blighted Areas Clause, and so as not to allow private property to be taken for public use without the appropriate restrictions. But here we're not talking about private property being taken for public use. We're talking about a township that says our library is no longer working for our population and we want a library that works for our population. Why does that implicate the Blighted Areas Clause or any concerns about taking of private property for public use or Gallatin or any of the other cases that are specifically talking about taking of private property for public use?
Okay. So, 2 points. Again, the definitions being the same, which I mentioned before, but two, when you get into redevelopment, you also have an erosion of equal protection as well. Property, not only property rights, but equal protection. And when I say equal protection, pilots. If you're in a redevelopment area, you can give property owner A and property owner B buy identical properties. Property owner A knows people in town, they designate his property to be an area in need of redevelopment. He gets a tax abatement. Property owner B doesn't get that same benefit. He now has to pay the full boat of taxes. Property owner A is not paying it. They're paying a pilot. They're in competitive businesses. And now all of a sudden, property owner B is at a disadvantage. Why? Because the town used a broad definition of redevelopment area to benefit property owner A, whereas property owner B is paying the full boat for identical properties.
But that's, again, private property owners, not public property, which is what we're talking about here, correct?
So with public properties, you have the issue of you have the public interest in the fact that this property doesn't have to then be subject to the highest bidder, being sold to the highest bidder. If you come in with a blight designation, you now can have somebody comes in, makes a deal for a dollar, for $100, for $1,000, whatever the number is going to be that they decide upon. But clearly the intent was not to go to the highest bidder. And this is money then that has to be made up by the taxpayers, people like Mr. Malanga, who has to pay more taxes because now all of a sudden they sold the library out for too little money.
It seems like the government here was saying that the reason that they wanted to go through this process was to be able to control not only whether it would go to the highest bidder, but how the whether it then turned out to be affordable housing or a library. They didn't want to just sell the land.
Okay.
They wanted to actually control what the land turned into. Why is that impermissible for a township?
it's the wrong tool in the toolbox. What the town could have done is you could potentially put out an RFP. You put terms of what you want to see built on the property. You enter into a sale of the property with conditions. Conditions that have to be met or the deal is undone. And you can guide it through the process, not having to use the redevelopment laws. There's other ways to control what happens using the laws and not abusing the redevelopment law and the redevelopment statutes.
And that would be, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
And the purpose of the public bidding laws is to prevent favoritism and promote unfettered competition among other developers, as opposed to townships having the ability to decide, we want this redevelopment done by this particular entity, and this is the entity that we're going to choose regardless. Correct.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. So who's to say that developer A is any better than developer B, who never had a chance?
Other questions, anyone?
No, Your Honors, I do appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justice and Judge of the Supreme Court. May it please the Court, on behalf of the Township of West Orange and the West Orange Planning Board, I have four initial comments, and then I'll get into the meat of it. The Court did ask, and they are as follows. One, this appeal may be functionally moot as a result of a settlement that we've entered into and a different statute that clearly permits this. Two, that the statutes clearly do provide this vehicle and the legislature has spoken. And three, that substantial credible evidence, in fact, Your Honors, the only evidence, the entire record is unrebutted. There is substantial credible evidence. There was not one scintilla before the Planning Board, which is the body that is entitled to the deference as long as there is a record and it's clear, there was no other evidence. Unlike in 6264 Main Street Hackensack, where there were 8 days of testimonies and competing experts and whatnot. So let me step back. Number one, functionally moot. The Court asked in June of this year, the Court accepted the petition in March. We got about 11 days ago the notice.
Can I ask you, you had a fourth point?
No, I folded it into the thing. I'm
keep
sorry.
Keep us away. That's
I'm sorry. Yes. No problem. Math is never a lawyer's strong suit. So the first point, functionally moot. So in March, this Court took the petition. As the Court knows, there is a specific exemption to public bidding under the Lands and Building Act that says if, and as was said by Justice, the law particularly allows the town to deed property without public bidding if it's solely for low and moderate income housing. And that is what's happening here. West Orange Senior Housing, this is under our Fair Share Housing Settlement. As the Court knows, in 2015, because of the issues with COA, we all had to go back to our superior courts in our counties. Judge Gardner is the affordable housing judge in Essex. We started a process for repose in 2015. We went through 5 years of mediation. As a result of the mediation in 2020, Judge Gardner approved our repose for the next 4 years, and this designated property is going to have 64 low and moderate income housing units. Now, in order to do it, in order to finance, and financing, this goes back to the whole redevelopment toolkit and what exists, it's complicated. The senior developer has to get 9% tax credits, which are critical in order to make this pencil out from a financing point of view. Now, part of that, just going back to what redevelopment is in this case, it's on the municipal complex. So we are getting 7,500 square feet. Keep in mind, the municipal building is located on this complex. It's all one lot and block. We're going to have to subdivide when we finalize this transaction. So I just want to finish my functionally moot so I don't step on my time. The bottom line is we expect now the new library is being built. The voters of this state approved in November of 2017 $100 million for libraries to compete to get money for new libraries. We competed in another redevelopment project that Mr. Malanga sued us on but was settled by the developer. We are building the new library on Executive Drive. It's about a mile and a half from this site. It's right in the center of town. It will have the Department of Homeland Security since 9/11 rents the third floor, actually trains flight marshals there, and we will be on the second
and first floors of that building. So the library's under construction. It'll be done in March. As part of the settlement that Mr. Turteltaub and I entered into that's been approved by the governing body, upon the closing, because we will be able to close under the exemption in the Lands and Building Act, then at that point, we will not need this designation as an area in need of redevelopment. So this will become moot. So obviously the court has absolute right, and we welcome the court's instruction all the time, but the court may determine that the petition in this case is not necessary because it may be much about nothing. And we did try to write to the court about that settlement. It got settled finally before Judge Gardner in late August. So that's number one. Number two, the facade of this building is undisputed. It collapsed. In January of 2015, we have videotape of this. The entire easterly side, as the court knows, this building is 63 years old, and the addition was built in 1978, about 43 years old. About 3:30 in the afternoon, an employee was walking over a car. We had the time-lapse video. 30 seconds later, the entire facade collapsed. So I say, one of the analyses that occurs then is we immediately had an architectural firm come in saying, hold it, are there other issues? And they came in, and it's in this record, it's PA-163A. PA-163A, and that was before the planning board and the town council, determined that we needed to spend $1,675,850, not for an optimal library, no, for an adequate facility that would be safe. And so again, the petitioner poo-poos asbestos and that the ADA, we don't comply with the ADA now. These buildings predate it, so the building construction official doesn't shut us down, but that doesn't mean that it's a library that is adequate and that that is serving the needs as is in this record of the public. So we get an architectural firm comes in, undisputed, $1,675,000. Then the voters, we get an opportunity to get money under this library bond grant. We get, as part of another redevelopment, where Homeland Security is, we get a building worth $7 million as part of that. So we say, what's the need? Well, the library is collapsing. We say, this is the time and the place, and we need to deal with it. We need to deal with senior housing. We need to deal with, as is in the record, digital inclusion. Libraries, I agree with council. Libraries aren't like when we used to bring our plastic cards in and get the books. They're about employment. They're about empowerment. They're about English as a second language. There is a whole panoply, and libraries are going to evolve over the next 100 years. And what is happening here in West Orange is we are making a 100-year commitment. We're making a commitment to our seniors so they can age in place. Yes.
Mr. Trank, if I could, I wanted to come to a legal issue, but because we're familiar with the facts, let me just go back to the mootness point. I didn't want to interrupt your first 5 minutes.
Yes.
Are you telling us that regardless of the outcome of this case, the township is going to proceed with the single developer working on low and moderate income housing?
Yes, except if in March, when we close and move the library, we're going to move the library to the new library that's being built as we speak. If at that point, for instance, we know there's a lot going on in the markets, if at that point he's not able to get the 9% tax credits, he got them renewed because they only have a shelf life of a certain amount of time. If for some reason at that point he's not able to do it, then the township will have basically a vacant building that's dilapidated, and we'll have to decide what to do at that point.
So you may or may not use the designation of in need of redevelopment that currently exists.
Well, if we close, we won't need it because we have the exception.
And if you don't?
If we don't, we want the designation because
it still has vitality.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We definitely own it and believe it is the appropriate course to deal with this 3.3 acres on the site of the municipal complex where our municipal court is and our police station, and immediately next door is the rent a house with 180 senior units.
So the township made a determination that this library needed to be replaced. And it could have gone about that in any number of ways, as you know from our earlier conversation. The town could have raised the building, put out for bidding a process to build an entirely new library, right?
Well, we don't want to close our library ever, but yes, if there was an imminent risk of someone being hurt, we would never leave a building open.
You could have done that even without there being an imminent risk. You could have made
yes.
a policy determination. This library needs to be replaced. You could have
Correct.
Sold the property off to the highest bidder in public auction just the same,
well,
correct?
Yes, no, or maybe. Yes, it is an avenue we could take, but being in the footprint of the municipal complex, that is, we don't want a Chick-fil-A. This is not about getting the most money for the buck. This is about a public purpose in this case. Whether it's senior housing or ancillary government buildings, it is our property. So yes, we did want a seat at the table in the disposition of what this asset would be.
So here's my concern. Among the many purposes that the town had, and you've articulated them in your briefs, one was to avoid the public bidding law requirement and to maintain control of the project that these other avenues might not have afforded you. How should that factor into the court's analysis of the case before us?
Under Riggs versus Long Beach, you look at the objective. Motive, when a public official said, we want to control the process, it still is about, as the court referenced a few minutes ago, under 5D, does it have faulty arrangement or design? Is it obsolescent? And therefore, is it, the second prong, is detrimental to the welfare of the community? So yes, Chief Justice, it is about us wanting a seat at the table, recognizing this is an integral part of our town, whether it's a library, whether it's senior housing, meeting our obligations. But in this particular case, there's no eminent domain here or whatnot. It meets the criteria under 5D. The issue about the fact that what flows from that is that you don't have to public bid, as I think we all agree, the statute says in a redevelopment area, there does not have to be for a lease or...
So let's look at the statute. And we're focused on the same statute. You have multiple options under 48.12-13. A talks about public bidding. C creates the exception to proceed in the manner that the township was originally proceeding here. That takes us to 5D. The legislative history, and Justice Pierre-Louis was alluding to this, speaks to the importance of public bidding to avoid corruption, to avoid favoritism, and all sorts of things. How do we read the two statutes in sync, and how do we read the breadth or the narrowness of the standards in 5D in light of the legislature creating a number of avenues, but also expressing a strong concern in favor of public bidding?
I think this court did it most recently in Dobco. What the court was concerned, as I read that, was that Bergen County Improvement Authority was trying to use the redevelopment law to avoid it, a GC, a general contractor. Our new library, we bid. We got 19 bids. We bid it twice to get a car. But so we are not using this under F. A G of 12A-8G says lease or convey property or improvements to any other property pursuant to this section without public bidding.
So but in Dobco we nullified the
because they were goods and services. That was a general contractor. This court made the right decision, and the court actually showed the distinction that in F, which is goods and services, it doesn't say without public bidding.
Is Mr. Turtletaub correct when he tells us that you could have accomplished your affordable housing objectives by putting out an RFP, which had in it senior housing, the number of units, the affordable housing requirements, et cetera, and putting that out for public bidding so that multiple developers could try to get the work?
So there is an RFP process. But keep in mind, that's not lowest public, under the local public contracts law, as was stated, it goes back to Sternin versus Hillside, it is the lowest responsible bidder. So the problem with that is, keep in mind, when you look at goods and services, and you look at the typical bid, you get a performance bond. You have an architect who controls it. If you're building a park, if you're building a library, if we were building a library,
I'm sorry, let me ask a very simply. Could your affordable housing objectives have been met through a process, whether an RFP process, which allowed for competing bids by developers?
Yes, but the question would be judging it. So think about the issue.
The question is judgment?
Judging it. How do you evaluate the submissions? Keep in mind, when you're looking to build a park or the Bergen County Courthouse Justice Center, you look for the lowest responsible price. It's about taxpayer money. So now think about this. This is more complicated. We want 75, we want egress and ingress to the site. It's on our complex.
Doesn't that happen a lot? Isn't that part of... RFPs all the time?
Well, again, you couldn't try to do a deed research and whatnot, but again, this...
Let me just ask you this. I know it might be a very complicated process. It might take a lot of resources. It might keep a lot of lawyers employed, which is not all bad, et cetera. But could it be accomplished in a competitive bidding process? And by that, I mean your affordable housing obligations, and in particular, the senior housing that you were trying to get at that site.
The short answer is there is a process where you could attempt to do that. It is specifically exempted in the redevelopment law. If we meet the criteria under 5D, then we are permitted to convey or lease real property without public bidding.
So let's talk about let's talk about some of the criteria then.
Yes.
5D. Obsolescence.
Yes.
And faulty arrangement or design. And the question is how many buildings could they potentially extend to in our state? Take this building, the atrium, which we enter when we come into the building, uses up a lot of empty space. It is, to quote the language of the redevelopment study, a style no longer current. It's a space that's not used for programming. It's not used for other purposes to advance the work of any of the offices here. And it quite likely is not conducive to modern energy efficient buildings. As you understand the term obsolescence, would those factors weigh in favor of a finding that this building is obsolete?
Well, I'm certainly not an architect or engineer, so I can't. I saw the water in the lobby when I walked in. So I have. So the short answer.
Are you right now working in a blighted area?
And there's probably asbestos somewhere, right? But I do think the short answer is, it's about the record, right? It's about substantial, credible evidence. It is about, in this case, libraries. What we have here is we did a survey. We're not meeting our patrons' needs. They keep pointing to 150,000, but the same survey says we don't have the conference rooms. We don't have the programmatic ability. Our new library will have all of that. So the short answer...
A lot of that sounds like you want a better library.
It's more than we want a library that meets the needs of the citizenry and the residents and the neighbors in our region for the next 100 years.
Again,
yes.
Over 150,000 individuals visit this library per year. It sounds like they're visiting the library, it's in use, and it is meeting the needs of over 150,000 people. I understand that, you know, the teen area isn't as palatial as, you know, the township, I guess, would like, but a lot of these arguments do sound like the township wants a nicer library and a better library, as opposed to this is obsolete and this is a building that's not functioning and actually cannot be used. I think that would qualify that this type of designation would be applicable to a lot of buildings in a lot of communities other than West Orange.
And again, the record, and specifically PA 141A, not only talks about the visits, as Justice, you're reflecting, it says on programs, we offer the bottom of the barrel. So keep in mind, this is a footprint that cannot be expanded. We only have 34 parking spaces for this library. The new facility with Homeland Security has 200 parking spaces. So those are all considerations of meeting need. We're a 50,000 person community. So when we say, okay, we've got 153,000 visits, and that, according to the survey, is lower mid, that does not mean that, especially as libraries evolve, English as a second language, empowerment, getting jobs. Keep in mind, as we all know, broadband is an issue. So it's
in
not
10 years, if there's some sort of internet or some new thing we don't even know about yet, that your new building doesn't accommodate, your new library, and it is making, you're fading in comparison to East Orange's library, Newark's library, et cetera, which have this facility that you can't have in this current library. I'm just imagining
yes.
Something there. Is your new library going to be blight?
Again, the answer is we will still be obligated to go through the rigorous process and put a record on, and the planning board and the township council, and then ultimately the court will have to consider it under the criteria.
Sounds like it might be then.
It depends. Again, if the roof falls in, maybe not. It doesn't mean it
roof
does.
Roof does fine.
I'm sorry.
Roof does fine. But there's some new technology, and it's certainly not beyond the imagination, that has to be accommodated in a particular way that your library, your new library hasn't been built for? Do you get to do the same thing in 10 years?
Again, the short answer is I don't know. I don't expect it. We're trying to build the new library in a way with all the broadband and all the capacity. But by the way, this library worked for 63 years. So it's not that we just threw it out like yesterday's, you know, socks or laundry. It's that the facade collapsed. There's no dispute. It's that we went out and got an architect and he said it'll cost you $1,675,000 just to have it adequate. It's not about optimal. I understand. We can't just do it because the whatever the rage changes, but this particular facility is falling apart.
So not just optimal use would not satisfy the standard for blight.
I'm sorry. Optimal, it's not getting a better library. It's about an adequate library that meets the needs of the people who use it. We did a survey.
The redevelopment study suggests that a critical problem was that the library was not being used in an optimal way. My question is that a standard that would guide the determination of blight?
Optimal, again, I don't think optimal is not the standard. It is adequate and being used to its fullest, meeting the needs of our town is what it's about. It's not about getting a Cadillac or a Rolls Royce of a library. This library is falling apart. It doesn't meet ADA requirements. It doesn't meet the requirements to have an adequate facility.
Doesn't it have to go beyond meeting needs? Doesn't 5D call for a finding that it is detrimental?
Yes.
To safety, health, morals, et cetera?
Yes. Which is
this building safe?
Yes. Which is why we...
This building safe?
Again, the building has substantial inadequate. I would strongly suggest that when the facade falls down unexpectedly at 3:30 in the afternoon, it is not safe.
You have, granted, and all buildings need maintenance, need repairs. That's not an uncommon thing. It doesn't automatically translate into a finding of blight. You have 150,000 people coming into this building. Are there code violations?
Again, if there were code violations, we would always address that. We're not going to let anybody jeopardized.
And you wouldn't allow them into the building if you thought it were unsafe.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor. You're absolutely right. But that, again, what specifically with regard to the two surveys, they say we fail because we can't, digital inclusion and equity are at play here. It's not just about buying more computers, it's about having that capacity. And so to Justice Patterson's example, this is not 10 years from now when, you know, they upgrade Windows or whatever the Macs will be then. This is about that we can't accommodate at the current site. And it would cost us $1,675,000 to do those capital repairs. I certainly understand, Chief Justice, your point that, hey, if you own a house, you should every couple of years do X or Y or Z. I understand that. But that's not where we're at this.
And that may go to the question of whether you needed to replace your library. But the core of this case is, can you circumvent public bidding in that process?
But it's not about circumventing public bidding. It's about, do we meet the criteria under 5D? It really is, because you only get to 12A8 if you meet the requirement of 5D. I totally agree that we need to meet the requirement of obsolescence, faulty arrangement or design. And that's what the unrebutted proofs in this record show.
Mr. Trank, I wanted to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Turtletop about 5D. Do you, in response to his examples about private property being taken because of or designated because of the broad definition in D, do you see equivalency in the situation under 5D where it's the detriment involves a publicly owned parcel versus private? Or can you address his concerns about how this case could affect potentially private parcels?
Well, I think in all of this court's analysis of redevelopment and of that potential, they're looking clearly at the taking, which is not implicated at all here. So that's why, Judge, I agree with the premise that it's not implicated. There is a record here. There are substantial credible findings and deference to the municipality. That's what mayor and council are elected to do. So it is not implicated, and it does have an impact, that there is no step as a result of denying the petition that will lead to the eminent domain of any property in this case. It's not possible. We own it. So it really does turn back to the convergence of, are the public bidding laws even implicated by this? They're not. It's either a substantial, credible evidence that we meet 5D or it's not.
But would you agree that the 5D standard, detriment, et cetera, is the same for a private parcel versus a public? Do you agree with that?
Under the current statute, the way it's written, they do not differentiate. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes. So again, we have substantial work that this building needs. We have substantial needs that the studies show. This was not done just rubber stamp an architect or anything else. We did hearings. We listened, and there is no other proofs. So the concept that as part of the confluence of the issues affecting West Orange, we want to address the affordable housing, we have to address the affordable housing, and we are going to have a new library because we got the grant, all of those issues come back to 5D, yes. And in this case, the library, the building is obsolete. It does not, just anybody who looks at it and drives by, and it's not that it's the Hughes Justice Complex. And I can't make the analysis because, thank goodness, your siding didn't fall down. If that decision was going to be made by the state, they would have to follow the process. They would have to evaluate it. They would have to see whether or not it's a faulty design. And Chief Justice, you may well be right that there are more efficient ways. I don't know until that analysis is done in those hearings, and anybody who wants to present and say that's not right. And again, only once we meet that criteria do we get to the clear exception that once it meets 5D, then we don't have to, and we can marry all these projects together and look at, the welfare, the general welfare of the town, which is based upon the deference that this court has historically given to the governing body in making this analysis and looking at the record.
Your answer presumes that the only way for the state to address one of its properties is through 5D. Is through an effort to determine and find that it's in need of redevelopment, placing to one side the public bidding avenue that is available. Is there a way to read those two statutes in harmony?
Well, I think the statutes are aimed, first of all, the local redevelopment and housing law is 1992, which is, you know, so this statute clearly knew about the local public contracts law. So it's not that this statute, and it specifically references it. So therefore, I would suggest they are read in harmony when the legislature determined in this statute that it was going to have an exception to the local public contracts law in a redevelopment designation.
So there's nothing wrong for a town to say, we're going to do whatever we can, and I'm not suggesting bad faith, and I'm not using the exact facts of your case here. We're going to do whatever we can to avoid public bidding. We want only to proceed through a designation of blight. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, again, so there are many town halls that are now above banks. I've seen it in many towns. There are housing projects where there are municipal buildings. So this redevelopment law, which has been successfully applied, and as is cited in this court's decision in Hackensack, over 1,000 different communities have multitudes of projects. You see them every town you go into in the state. And so the short answer is there is nothing wrong as long as we meet the criteria to say we want to marry different needs of the town together. We want, in this case, we never knew, any of us in this courtroom, that COVID was coming. Now that we know there may be another health issue, we desperately want to have a health center. We want to have a community center. Libraries, in fact, are partially community centers. Now, you could see in the record here as to how libraries are used. Many libraries, according to the studies, now have fitness classes, are health centers. We can't ever do that in West Orange. Our building is collapsing. It needs $1,675,000 right away. So either the governing body allocates $1,675,000 as a five-year plan and fixes this structure, and it'll still be inadequate to meet the needs, and it won't make it.
You say it's collapsing. What happened? I mean, it collapsed.
So the brick.
But people visited the library how soon after that?
Well, the short answer, it was on the easterly part of the building, so it wasn't by the main entrance. So we roped off the entire parking lot for months while they evaluated the rest of the facade to make sure that other parts of the building, if the brick, this is the brick facing.
Was there an interruption in service to the public?
Again, I don't know whether it was days or weeks. It certainly, we got it open as soon as possible because there were entrances that we determined were safe. And again, as I'm sure Mr. Turtle have, we then did do an emergency repair. We weren't going to leave it in, you know, they then has the siding that we weren't going to leave the uncovered siding. So we did spend some emergency money on that building.
What was the nature of the collapse specifically? You started to tell us.
All the brick. It had brick facade.
Right. And the bricks fell down?
They all fell on the entire side of the building. And it crushed cars. There were cars parked right underneath them, and cars were totaled. And we have, you know, we have all kinds of, as your honor can imagine, video in that part because it's right next to the municipal court and the police building. We have tape of people at 3:30, a woman leaving the library, going to her car, and thank goodness she made it by 30 seconds. So
and you're focusing on this collapse a lot, but the redevelopment study, the HGA redevelopment study that you relied on for this designation, the focus of that study and that conclusion is on the fact that the library, you know, doesn't meet the modern library needs, and the library is lacking because it doesn't have some of these some of the things that modern libraries need. And you know, the conclusion was that there's a clear connection between obsolescence, faulty arrangement, design, and obsolete layout of the library, with its inability to adequately serve the needs of the community, which represents a detriment to the public welfare. I mean, that was the focus of that study that you're relying on. So I know that, I guess, thereafter at some point, what did you say, in 2021, the collapse
occurred? No, the collapse happened in 2015.
2015, sorry, it occurred. But I mean, a lot of the focus of this redevelopment study is on the size of the size of the different areas and the fact that there's not quiet study rooms. I mean, you would agree with that. I mean,
Again, I do have to point out the Higher Gorilla study, which was done in 2019, that's PA 121A, specifically incorporates the Acari and Iovino architectural study that was done, that's PA 156A. Right.
I understand that, but a lot of the focus is also on some of the other things we've been discussing about the fact that the library could really be nicer and have larger spaces.
But it's more than nicer, it's programmatic, yes. Right. We do not believe, because the footprint is constrained. Again, it's 20,000 square feet. It is constrained. We're not able to do more. So it not only talks about the Acari architectural study of $1,675,000 that's not disputed, it also has the Information Policy Access Center, IPAC study, which is PA 245A, which talks at length about digital inclusion and equity, which is critical. We have a library strategic plan that where everyone in the community was interviewed, 427 people plus all the leaders, the superintendent of schools, the mayor, everyone else. We had an asbestos study done. It's all incorporated in the Higher Gruel study and the IMLS, the Institute of Museum Library Services, which is a national organization, came in. That's where that chart, in fact, that the court was, you were referring to earlier, is spoken about in different categories. So it's more than just the collapse. But yes, the collapse is what started this process. We didn't wake up one day and say, you know, that we were in some dire need. But once it collapsed, it's just like when my car. I have a car with over 100,000 miles. The brakes went. Now the screen, so when you back up, went. There comes a point where I say, it's time. And yes, I could go in different avenues. But in this case, the redevelopment law allows us to look at these issues, determine whether it's obsolete, determine whether it's faulty design or arrangement, and whether or not that constitutes a detriment to the community.
Well, but it's detrimental to the safety, health, morals, or welfare of the community. Let's start with the easy one. Is the library detrimental to the morals of the community?
If it doesn't meet the needs.
To the morals of the community.
Well, again.
Detrimental, the existence of the library, detrimental to the morals of the community.
No, it's aimed at being the opposite.
Correct. Okay. Absolutely. So safety, you're saying you solved?
No, we band-aided it. We haven't spent $1.6 million on this building.
Is it detrimental for people in West Orange to go to the library? Is it unsafe?
The answer is there endemic that the facade collapsed? We don't know. What we don't know. We've done everything we can, and if we felt today it was an imminent hazard, you're absolutely right.
Is the existence of the continued use of the library detrimental to the safety of the people using it?
We certainly hope not, but that doesn't mean it's not, keep in mind.
Are you here contending that it is? That it is detrimental to the safety of the people using it?
It is, as the cases have shown, the continuum of dilapidation and of detriment. So yes, it's not that I walk in today and I have to worry that the ceiling is going to fall on me, but yes, our position is it is detrimental to the safety, health, and welfare of the township because it doesn't meet the needs and because there are real health and safety issues with regard to this structure. It will not meet the needs.
Are there schools in West Orange that are in need of being replaced or repaired?
The benefit of being town attorney is the short answer is I'm sure there are regular capital improvements that occur and should occur with regard to the schools, but I don't know.
They're detrimental to the safety and health and welfare of the students.
Well, but what's interesting about the question, Justice, is so we had an opportunity with regard to a different redevelopment, and we got land dedicated so we could build a new middle school. We had a desperate need, and there's a new middle school on the Livingston-West Orange border because as part of redevelopment and zoning, we got land donated that we could never have afforded. But we got a brand new, it's called Liberty Middle School. So the short answer is when we had overcrowding in our schools, we looked and we needed a middle school. We used the powers that are needed to deal with density, deal with those issues that go into good government.
And I understand all that, and it's great that there's a new middle school. But my point is, if you have old schools in West Orange, and I don't know the specifics of the West Orange facilities, but if there are old schools that are behind the times and don't have facilities that modern schools have, are they detrimental to the safety or health, leave aside morals, or welfare of the students?
All I can tell you is, I can tell you what the mayor's position is. If the facade fell while teachers were walking or while parents were picking up, he would make immediate action and he would go to the Board of Ed and the superintendent and said, you need to do something as quickly as possible to look for a new facility. He might band-aid it. The town has built things to help our schools, even though it's separate, but we would take action because we would never want anyone hurt. And we would look ahead and say, what are we going to do as a town to try to solve the issue? If we knew of an issue in a school that was not being addressed.
Can we go back to what you're trying to accomplish right now? So you said there is a new library that's being built and it's opening in March, no matter what.
Yes.
But you still want the redevelopment designation. Why?
Well, again, if we have a settlement, if we are successful and the current redeveloper who's been designated closes, then we don't need it because it falls under another subsection for affordable housing. But if not, then we're even in a bigger pickle. We now have a vacant building that we need to address what we do with it. We still have a commitment under our fair share housing settlement to put affordable housing. So yes, we are going to then consider whatever vehicle, and yes, we do not have to publicly bid it. We will look for the developer who meets the needs of the town at that time under affordable housing, because that's what the redevelopment plan is. And Mr. Malinga has no concerns. If we try to then rezone it to put a Chick-fil-A there, we'd have to go through the whole ordinance process. We'd have to go back to the planning board and he could sue us again. So
you're saying no matter what, you plan to rely on 40-12-21?
Well, 1221 is the exemption for affordable housing.
Correct.
But we don't know who would be our developer at that point, right?
Correct.
So that's why this took us years and we almost lost everything, including Executive Drive, because of all the litigation. You know, this we didn't get here overnight. So we believe since it meets the statutory criteria under 5D that the designation stands. That it is obsolete, it'll even be more, talk about disuse, it'll be really in disuse then, there'll be no use there. But again, at that point, we're gonna look for affordable housing because we have a commitment under our Superior Court settlement with Fair Share Housing, and we're gonna move forward as quickly as possible. Now again, finances are changing the world as we sit here.
Can I just pick up on what Justice Wainwright just asked? You say you want a decision in case the settlement falls apart. Am I right?
No, I think it's functionally moot, and this court could either abide that event or could dismiss the petition. We didn't petition, obviously, to the court. But as a result of the settlement that we entered into in August, which basically cements this, this will be moot. Because at that point, because of the exception, because the long-term tax law allows for the pilot, the redevelopment designation won't be necessary.
But when the Chief Justice asked if you, when the Chief Justice asked, even if the settlement does go through, would you still want the designation? Oh. I thought you said yes.
No, I'm sorry. If we close, we don't need it. Our settlement is up. We're going to repeal it because we won't need it.
But you want it in place now because it might not close.
Well, I think you could defer. I'm sure this court has been incredibly busy, and we could buy that event because it'll be moot. That's why I'm not. The court picks whatever cases it picks. It has a right to write on anything.
We have a case in front of us.
Okay.
Yours is an argument of mootness that there's no point at all for us to continue going forward, and yet you've identified for us, if I heard you correctly, that there may well be a possibility.
I have to be candid with the court. So there is a possibility if the closing doesn't occur, and that's events that aren't fully within the township's control, that we do believe the designation is appropriate, and we'd want to have the 5D designation in place for then, and then we'd have to move forward to get a new redeveloper. We hope, we are committed to the affordable housing under our fair share housing settlement.
You're not offering to undo the designation in order to make the case entirely
not after we spent 3 years of litigation and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Can I ask you to go back to a question that Justice Wiener-Apter asked of your colleague across the aisle? In 4812-13, how should we read the phrase other than county or municipal lands?
Because I think in that case, the it is permissible to do it without public bidding. I think that because we own it, we're able to sell it. And therefore, we're not restricted under the Lands and Building Act to a different scenario.
So sorry, you're saying that A, B, and C in 12-13 only apply to sales other than county or municipal lands, so that it would not be relevant to this case?
Again, we believe under the exception in C, it's not implicated.
Go ahead. Do you have the statute in front of you?
One second.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question relates to the first phrase and then one that follows. Any county or municipality may sell any real property. And then skipping down a bit is the phrase other than county or municipal lands. How do we, what does that latter phrase tell us? What does it mean?
Again, I have to interpret that to mean that we go under the Lands and Buildings Act and therefore we have to do it under the statute or the exception of redevelopment.
So if a county or a municipality owns land,
yes,
they want to sell it. Are they bound? Are they bound by A if the LHRL doesn't apply?
Yes. If the local redevelopment law does not apply, we would normally put it up and sell it pursuant to those requirements.
To public bidding.
I'm sorry?
You would sell it by public bidding.
Yes. And normally you don't put restrictions on that because it's surplusage that you don't need. In this case, we do need it for our affordable housing or for our municipal complex.
Anything you'd like to add?
No. We think the unrebutted record in this case shows that it did. This is not where there were cursory or bland recitations. There is a record. The record reflects that the existing library has major structural, it'll cost us $1,675,000, deficiencies in terms of serving the community, and that it is permitted to do it in this fashion under 12A8-F.
Thank you, Mr. Trank.
Thank you.
Mr. Turtletop.
Earlier in my argument, Justice Patterson had asked me about the standard that I would contemplate under D. And in hearing the argument and thinking about it a little bit more, I think these are case-by-case determinations based upon the evidence in the record. In this case, the evidence in the record deals with the issue of, could it be better? And I think in the opinion that, you know, in the decision we're looking at this court, I think in this case, the court should look at whether the criteria or the condition that it could be better is sufficient enough to warrant a redevelopment designation. And I believe the answer is no. I don't believe it could be better is the type of blight that's looked at by the Constitution. I don't think it was contemplated by the framers of the Constitution when they wrote the Blighted Areas Clause that any property that could be better. In fact, when we go to the Kelo case, which was a U.S. Supreme Court case, I had argued another case on 110 Washington the day after it, and the justice asked me, Judge Costello asked me, how is this different than Kelo? And the answer is, in New Jersey, we have a Blighted Areas Clause. We look at blight. We don't look at whether something could be better, whether it could add a tax dollar. We have a specific, very narrow focus on what we're looking at in terms of what constitutes an area in need of redevelopment. That's blight. And could be better, I think, is very analogous to the Galenton decision, which says suboptimal. It's really very little difference between the two of them. One happens to be under subsection E, the other under subsection 4.
And you're focusing there on the language of the two subsections being similar.
Correct. With respect to the conditions that were discussed, the facade was included in the reports that they relied upon. The facade was repaired. It's done. We had a case earlier on. Mr. Malanga had challenged a redevelopment designation to the shopping center, the Essex Green Shopping Center, and Judge Fisher had at that time ruled it was the same discussion about conditions that might happen, what could happen. And in that case, which is part of the pleadings in this matter, one of the cases cited, the court said, and the redevelopment statute says, what are the conditions, not what were the conditions, what may be the conditions. The statute says, the redevelopment law says, what are the conditions? And the conditions are, as Chief Justice Ravner talked about, the facade's been repaired. As the question came up, well, is the facility open? Yes. There are no limitations as to where people can go. Mr. Trank admits they did a structural analysis. There is no fear that this structure, the facade, is going to come down. There is no obsolescence. In fact, it's probably better than it was in 2015 because they've repaired it. But the fact is that it's not a condition at the time of the designation that warranted a blight designation. Just because something breaks and gets repaired doesn't then say everything else is broken.
So can you talk about the settlement from this past August?
Yes. So the settlement of last August dealt with the town used the other tool in the toolbox, as we said they should do. You know, that there are other ways to address it, certain situations, and they did go under the public building laws exception for affordable housing. But they have not withdrawn the redevelopment designation. Without withdrawing the redevelopment designation, if, let's say, their deal falls apart, they could then turn to another developer who could build an affordable housing project that includes both market and affordable housing units. There would be nothing to prevent that. So then you could be giving away the land, again, at a suboptimal price, a below market price, to somebody who then would have an inclusionary development that would have 85% market units and 15% low affordable housing units. So we don't know what the future holds for us. And as we expressed to this court and at the time, we still don't know where they're going with all of this. Because as Mr. Trank says, he doesn't know they're going to close on the deal. So as the matter is before this court today, it is a viable claim and it is it's a valid concern. And I think one not only addresses this situation, but future situations that may arise. But clearly we're not asking for an advisory opinion because this is an actual case going on right now. When you look at the Justice Apter, does that answer?
Yes.
Okay. When we look at the other issues raised in the report, when they talk about the services, they had to go to a library. Well, first of all, a study with every library in the country. Ms. Gruhl admits that. She says, I just pulled that data from every library in the country. She focused on three libraries, one in Louisiana, one in Illinois, and one in Pennsylvania. She didn't have any data to compare what goes on in New Jersey. So when we talk about what the condition is and what the services are being provided, she doesn't go into what those services are. She doesn't go into what's happening in New Jersey. And again, you may have different situations. In a rural environment, you may have people that need to, you know, that may need certain services, where even in an urban environment, you have different services. People in some towns have computers, other towns don't. So maybe if you're in a town where people don't have computers, you need more computer services, so you have more computers, whereas in a town where people can afford them, maybe it differs. All of those are factors that may indicate why one library has a certain service and another one doesn't.
Can you respond to Mr. Trank's argument that there was no alternative position put forth? No other expert came forward. Yes, these may or may not be issues, but we don't know from the record in front of us.
So this is not an issue of competing evidence, because at that point, the municipality would do what it is. The question is whether the evidence underlying the determination reaches the standpoint of substantial credible evidence in support of blight. Yes, a report could have been done. These studies are done on 10 days' notice to the public, and they come forward. In this case, there was an examination that was done of the planner. She admitted during the examination she doesn't know anything about libraries, that she doesn't work on libraries. The evidence also in the record doesn't give rise to the substantial credible evidence. Yes, there could have been evidence that says exactly what we're saying in our legal papers. You could have had a planner come in and said, well, this isn't what the statute meant. This wasn't obsolescence. The same things. But the record itself doesn't contain that substantial credible evidence that was required. Similar, I believe, was Aerotech didn't have any substantial credible evidence or competing evidence that says that the area wasn't blighted. The question is, do you have enough here to say, based upon the determination, and I think it all really rests in paragraph 6 of the resolution, which says that this building doesn't accommodate modern library services, whatever they may be. And we say that is not a conclusion that is warranted under subsection D, but in addition, the record doesn't have that substantial credible evidence. And it's not for us to make the record, my client. Its question is it there for you? We could have added, there could have been additional evidence there, but I think your justices have substantial amount of information in the papers and volumes we've given you to show that you read through all of it. It doesn't show blight. It may show we want a better library, and again, I think that's the standard we should be looking at least in this case, is could be better is not enough. Because as I think, as Justice Patterson points out, 5 years, 10 years, we could be right back here again. Technology changes every day. And if you want to get to an ends, you can always make up the story. And here, being better was the story. We already know what they wanted to do. They wanted to void the public bid law. And this could happen everywhere. And even, just one other thing, too, on the asbestos, too, that there is a point. A, again, the library remains open to all people. Asbestos doesn't have to be removed. Asbestos, if it's present in the building when it's demolished, has to be treated specially when it's removed. But there's no law that says you have to remove asbestos from it. And again, with all of the concerns raised by Mr. Trank as to the condition of the building and the safety hazards, again, actions speak louder than words. The building is open. The building is serving the public. There are no limitations. There are no barriers. There's no nothing in it. When you look at the sufficiency of space argument, the architect didn't say you had to build a new building. He said you had to rearrange the areas, just moving furniture around. That doesn't cause blight when moving furniture around will create the space at least the architect thought would make it work here.
I think we have your position, counsel. Anything else?
I thank you very much, Your Honors, for your time today, and appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll take the